Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This NBA season, every shot you take with Fanatics Sportsbook puts points on the board. Earn up to 10% fan cash on your bets, win or lose. So even if your bet misses, you're still scoring fan cash, which unlocks exclusive rewards like authentic apparel, game tickets, and meeting legends at Fanatics events. Make the switch and turn every bet into a bucket with Fanatics Sportsbook. Winning hits different here. Must be 21 plus. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or 1-800-522-4700. MD, visit mdgambling.org. Offer not available in all states. Terms apply. See Fanatics Sportsbook app.
Deborah had to have surgery.
I had hip surgery in November of 2024.
Her United Healthcare nurse, Crystal, checked on her.
We do a routine call after surgery, and I could tell that she was struggling.
Deborah needed help.
My infection markers were through the roof.
And Crystal knew what to do.
I called the hospital and said she's coming in.
And got Deborah the help she needed.
Crystal and United Healthcare saved my life.
Hear more stories like Deborah's at UHC.com. Benefits, features, and/or devices vary by plan area. Limitation and exclusions apply.
Sing it, Johnny. Is Johnny considered country western? I don't know. So last night on this show, I talked about Minneapolis. And I posed the question to you, the listening audience, what would bring you to downtown Minneapolis? Is there anybody out there that wants to come to downtown Minneapolis to do anything? And we took some phone calls on it. One of the things that I said was, it reminds me of a hellhole that drains your, if you work in downtown Minneapolis. And Benita Soccer took that and took umbrage with it. And I have no problem with that. She brought it up this morning on the morning news with Benita Soccer. And I get what she's saying, because she wants to see the best of Minneapolis. You know, and how do we rebuild it? How do we get it right? I get all that, and I'm not upset with her at all. But it brought about kind of a lightning rod if you've been out, you know, and people start talking about it and it starts buzz. I don't pay a lot of attention to social media, so I don't know where it moved there. I just know that I got to tell you, I thank this audience. I mean, the number of emails and texts I've lost track of. People that I just respect tremendously. And saying that we, at some point, you know, somehow we've got to address this issue. And that is that downtown Minneapolis is not what it could be. And it's, in my opinion, not even close. But this isn't about me. When I see what's happened to downtown Minneapolis, I don't say, well, this is all about my opinion of downtown Minneapolis. I go out onto the streets and I talk to the people in downtown Minneapolis. And I talk to the people that own businesses in downtown Minneapolis. And I talk to the people that visit or don't visit downtown Minneapolis, and I ask why or why not. And I talk to the people that office in downtown Minneapolis, and I ask them about what it's like. And you start to develop some sources and some consensus in this thing. And then I have the perspective of coming down here for 36 years, as of February 1st, 1986, until just the last week, 36 years to downtown Minneapolis. I've seen the trend. I've seen what it's like. And I've seen the ebb and flow and the highs and the lows. When we had the Super Bowl here a few years ago, it couldn't have been better. I mean, you in January, and we are lighting this place up in the best possible way. It is fun. It is people. It is festive. People are getting after it. And then I saw COVID come. And I saw the day that the man took his own life, and somebody said that the police officer shot him, and it wasn't true, but it was too late. And they came, and they people came and ripped apart a good piece of downtown Minneapolis, including right where I work on 11th and Nicollet. And I became so saddened by it, and I became it got to a point where I go, I never thought I'd see this. And then I saw the boards go up on our windows and all the windows in downtown Minneapolis. And it was just sad. It was just so sad to see. And you'd walk out what used to be this, you know, this walk through downtown that you just enjoyed so much, and the joy was gone. And you'd look to see who was rebuilding their offices and who, you know, what windows had been broken. And then I talked to the people, and I mentioned this earlier today, you know, Ping's Restaurant on 14th and Nicollet. I should go back there again. It's a wonderful, kind of a landmark place. And the last time I was there, which was probably a month ago or so, they're only doing takeout, and the lady that runs it was telling me she didn't know if she was going to, you know, stay in business. And it just saddened me because, you know, here she is. She's living the American dream. And she had done it the right way. And you walk out of there on 14th and Nicollet, and you see things that alarm you. You know, you smell marijuana. You see people lighting up in a car. You're not quite sure. And you kind of scurry back. Now, downtown Minneapolis is more than that. It also is home to the homeless. And has been for a long time, long before COVID, long before George Floyd. And what the George Floyd incident did for me was, instead of looking at massive groups of people, I started to look at them one by one and realize that each one had their own story. So I started to stop and talk to the homeless in the summertime, not so much in the winter, a little bit in the winter. And I have been so enlightened and so amazed by that group of people. Number one, I can't believe how many of them watch the news on TV. They go back to shelters, etc. And they comment, you know, what they saw on television. And I have sat with them at PV Plaza on beautiful nights in the summer and listened to their stories. And their stories are compelling because so many times you're going, if not by the grace of God, that could be me. And they're not a threat. They're not a violent threat to those of us that work here and, go back and forth. But you need to stop and talk to them. And you find out that some of them have a mental illness that they're aware of. And you feel for them. That's, to me, that's kind of the beauty of downtown Minneapolis, is on its best days, it's got this massive diversity and this melting pot of people from every walk of life. And it reminds you as you walk through, no matter where you come from, it reminds you in life's rawest terms how different everybody is. And that, you know, I come from one place, but somebody else comes from another. And at its best, it does that for you. It reminds you to get out of your bubble and get out of your comfort zone. And so I've made that my quest over the last few years. To visit with the homeless, to talk to the people that own the businesses, to talk to the people that office here, to talk to whoever converses as you walk down the street. And obviously, because I'm on TV, I get stopped a lot. And lots of people want to talk. And sometimes it's, you know, somebody that works for the city. And sometimes it's, and you fill in the blank. And I am just, I don't believe, based on all those conversations, because I'm a reporter first at heart. I love being a reporter more than anything else, more than being a talk show host, a television anchor. I love being a reporter. I think being a reporter is the most fun thing that I do. And being a reporter requires you to go out and listen to a whole bunch of different people and opinions and listen to facts in terms of what they've seen. And they're alarmed and they're saddened and they're discouraged in downtown Minneapolis. And if you're unaware of what's going on in downtown Minneapolis, then I don't really appreciate the comments. Because I've lived it. And people say, you live in the suburbs. Yep, I do. And I drive to downtown Minneapolis every day. And I walk the streets and I talk to the people. And I go do stories in North Minneapolis and in South Minneapolis and everywhere in between. And I listen. And I listen to the people that live it. And I see what it's like because I live it as someone that works downtown. And I've put a lot of money into this town over the last 36 years. You know, it's $3,000 a year just to park here. Before you talk about all the food you bought, the clothing you bought, the entertainment you've done, I put a lot of money into this city. And I expect it to be good in downtown Minneapolis. And I should. And you should, too. You should expect it to be safe and vibrant because there has been a ton of money spent on downtown Minneapolis. The Nicollet Mall, and they redid it and all those things. You should expect that from downtown Minneapolis. You should expect this to be a place where you go and it's vibrant and you get energy and you say, eh, it cost a little, but it was worth the cost. That's not happening right now. When you shut Target down at 6 o'clock at night, and you shut the Skyways down at 6 o'clock at night for the obvious fear of you don't know what's going to happen after six. It's difficult not to be depressed by that. On cold winter nights, when I'd walk from Target Center over to 11th and Nicollet, so I'd go to the Timberwolves for one half, and then I'd walk back to the TV station, and I'd see maybe four people in the last four blocks. That's not comforting, folks. And I know there are some people that want to believe in Camelot, and that this is, you know, what we need to talk about what can be done, how we're going to rebuild it. Okay. But we don't decide what the news is. The news is what the news is. You don't get to pick what the news is because you want it to be that way. That's not the way it works. I wish it was. But when I go eat at a restaurant the other night, and there's like five people in a place that seats 300, and it's a Thursday night, I mean, that's not the way. You want downtown to be a destination, a place that people come. And I know some of that's COVID-related. But I also know that I'm not so sure that we bottomed out in downtown Minneapolis, and I certainly don't think we figured out a plan as to how to rebuild this thing. And, you know, we've got the Dayton's Project over there. We had the lady on from the Dayton's Project, Ms. Bethune, and it's a wonderful project. Conceptually, it's great. It speaks to what, you know, our history and Dayton's and all those things. It's really cool. But they need a bunch of other commerce going on to make that palatable, to make that work. And we're a long way from having that right now. And I said this before, but I'm not kidding. I wear tennis shoes not because I'm trying to imitate David Letterman, because I want to make sure that if I can't get to my car, I'm going, man. I'm running. And I know where the next place is. You know, I saw a guy one night last year, 2 years, I can't even remember now. It's all a blur after a while, but I remember the events. And he had a skateboard, and he was up in front of me on 12th and Nicollet at night. I was walking to my car, and all of a sudden, for some reason, he got mad. And he took that skateboard, and he just smashed windows in a building. And then he skateboarded on. That's not normal, folks. I saw it. I saw it with my own eyes. I've seen things. I see things that I've never seen before. I've seen windows broken and cars broken into, including my own. I'm not making this up, folks. I know it's not what you might want, but it is what it is. And I know that many, many, many of you understand that. And it doesn't mean that you're trying to dissolve downtown Minneapolis. It means that until there's some resolution or you see some improvement, you're not coming to downtown Minneapolis. And I think that's fair, because we, those that, of us that work here and those people that run it, need to make this a place where people want to come. And you can live this fantasy land where you go, well, yeah, if everybody just starts to come down and have a dinner in downtown Minneapolis, everything will be good. Okay, but that's not going to happen. So at some point in time, you got to get real about this thing instead of pretending. And if you want to know what's going on in downtown Minneapolis, be my guest. Go park your car a couple blocks away and walk like I do every day to work. walk from the radio station to the TV station? I don't have all the answers. When they have these riots, go out there. Insert yourself. Go into these crowds. And let me tell you, today would be a good example. Amir Clark at the government center. Do you want to know how people feel about that? Go over there and engage them in conversation. They'll be happy to engage you in conversation. And it won't be yelling. It won't be rhetoric. It'll be civil conversation. And you will be able to ask any question that you want to most of the people there. And you'll be able to say, now, tell me why you're upset and tell me how you feel. And you will gain this whole new perspective and knowledge that goes into it. But you got to go. You can't just sit back. You got to go and engage yourself in that community if you want to know the answers. And it's not enough just to have an opinion. You got to ask them the questions that you want answers to. They're not going to be offended. But if we're going to build this thing, we need to engage and we need to know what's going on. And it's not enough just to say, we need to, if everybody just thinks positive, I think we can get this turned around. No, you can't. We need concrete methodology as to how to get this back. We need ways to attract businesses to downtown so they want to come here. And it can't be that they just do it out of charity. There's got to be something sitting there for them that makes it worthwhile. We have to do that with them. We have to make it easy for people to park at the meters instead of how it is now. We have to have easy access to things. There's lots of things that we have to do. And then we have to engage with one another. And I don't have all the answers, but I have a lot of questions, and I go out and ask those questions every day. And it might be with the homeless person, maybe with the guy that owns the restaurant, it might be with the guy that's a financial planner in the IDS Center, but I ask the questions, and then I listen. That's it. And when it's not Camelot downtown, folks, it's bad. And you can't get around that. But you can keep asking questions, you can keep trying to figure it out, and you can keep talking to people. I talk to people from 38th in Chicago. I talk to people all the time, different places. And then I listen. And when the riots happened, I went out on the front lines to talk to them out there. And I'd invite you to do the same. Don't tell me what happened out there. If you want to know, go out there. Because you'll be amazed at what you learn. And you'll be amazed how transformative it is. And you'll be amazed how much that tells you about what's going on in Minneapolis and downtown Minneapolis. Period. And it's not just, this isn't about me saying it's a hellhole that drains the life out. That's not what this is about. It's about identifying what the issues are and then trying to make changes. But we haven't even identified all the issues. We haven't gotten to rock bottom yet. And the only way you can know that definitively and understand what I'm saying is to go out there and live it. Anybody wants to go out there and live it? Be my guest. Be my guest. I'll run into you out on the street, I'm sure. When we come back, the Super Bowl is here. There's this guy I know that's covered more Super Bowls than almost anybody I know. I'm going to ask him about what it's like to cover a Super Bowl when we come back. Took the midnight train, going anywhere. Welcome back, Sports to the Max. The Hammer, we call him, Craig Schreffner. Veteran of WCCO Radio and a veteran of covering Super Bowls over the years. Been a little bit different, obviously, the last year, etc. But he's been there, done that. And Hammer, this time of year, as we go to L.A. You're not going to L.A. this weekend, are you?
I'm flying out on Thursday,
actually.
Come on. Yes, I am.
Are you and E?
Yes, we're flying out Thursday afternoon, and we'll be there through Tuesday.
Wow. So far to date, what has been... When you say the best Super Bowl, I don't mean in terms of who won or lost, but the best Super Bowl in terms of city ambiance that you've covered.
I really like the way Atlanta did their Super Bowl a couple of years ago.
Really?
And you were down at that one, too. It just felt like everything is organized. Well, first of all, Radio Row is actually...
I was Atlanta, too. What am I saying? I saw you there.
Exactly. Well, Radio Row, they actually had a convention center instead of a food court.
Yep.
So you had more room to move around and everything.
Yep.
And I just think Atlanta, they've hosted so many big events over the years, they actually have a good idea for what they know what to do. Like, they've had the Olympics, they've had Final Fours.
True.
So Super Bowl is nothing out of the ordinary.
They keep it all in one little...
Exactly.
One quarter of the city, don't they?
They do, exactly. They have a nice little downtown area where it's easy to get around, easy to travel back and forth to the stadium, hotels, everything. I really like the way Atlanta did the coverage of their Super Bowl.
And obviously, the greatest Super Bowl you ever were at was when your team Seattle won it, right?
That's still the greatest night of my life. I'm still in disbelief that actually happened.
But you were there.
I was there, and that's just they just dominated from the outset.
Now, is it true you were hugging Seattle fans that you'd never met before?
Yes, that is
was
true.
That kind of a feel?
That is true, yes.
Well, so what do you anticipate in L.A.? I haven't looked to see the restrictions, et cetera.
Well, I know the Bengals just arrived today.
Yeah.
And they're going to do virtual stuff on Wednesday, Thursday. But Friday, I guess at the practices, they're going to have outdoor media availability. So I'll be interested how that goes. But for the most part, things are still restricted in L.A. I mean, you have to wear your mask when you're indoors and everything. You don't have normal access like you had previous years. So they're still they're trying to open up little by little, but still there are restrictions you have to deal with.
Right. The last thing you want is to bring your team to the Super Bowl and find out that they got COVID on Tuesday because they were doing interviews.
Exactly, right? Yes.
So I get that, but for people that don't understand, that's a tough way to cover it. It's easy, but it's tough. You know, part of the fun of it is to go into these areas and you go, look at all these players, you know, and look at all these people. I mean, that's what makes the Super Bowl cool.
Yeah. My favorite part over the last couple of years is like when you go to the team hotels and they have the media availability, like they'll bring one guy to the main podium to talk. Then, like in one ballroom, there are like eight other podiums for key players. They have players sitting around the table or just kind of waiting for people to talk to them.
Yeah, and you don't know that if you're doing it virtually, but like you might walk in there, like I remember the one in Atlanta, and the Rams were in that, and
yes.
There's John Sullivan.
Exactly.
John played for the Vikings. Perfect. Cordero Patterson. Oh, Cordero played for the Vikings. Those were perfect interviews for me that you're not going to get virtually. You have to be there to see.
Great example. And like I do a lot of freelance work when I'm down there. So like my boss for freelance, he just gives me this name, like, hey, get this guy. I try asking like two or three questions or so, and I send the sound back, and the affiliates are happy with it.
Yeah. That's it. And we'll get it back, but it's just different. You're still going to have fun out there because you and he always have fun.
Yeah, we've got an interesting weekend. I got a buddy who lives out there too, who's going to kind of show us around and everything, so that's going to be helpful as well.
Okay, stay out of Beverly Hills. It's very expensive.
I've been there once. I know what you mean.
All right, thanks, buddy. When we come back, Blake Hoffarber breaks down basketball and the Gophers and the Big Ten and more. Stay with us. I cannot believe what I'm about to say. We're talking about possible rain tonight. Come on. You got to be kidding me. I don't know if I want rain because I'm afraid it's going to turn into ice so quick. But that's what we're talking about. Tomorrow, high of 36 degrees. Thursday, down to 9 degrees for a low, 37 for a high, 80% chance of snow. Friday, cloudy. Start out at 4 degrees up to 37. Then Saturday, we're back down to 5 below for a low, 7 above for a high. How is this working? Currently, it is cloudy, hazy, depending on where you are, and 38 degrees. Blake Hoffarber knows a lot about basketball because he played at a high level at Hopkins, University of Minnesota. This gets back to what I'm talking about. If I want to know about what's going on in the Big Ten, I can give you an opinion from the cheap seats, but when I get somebody that's actually played in the Big Ten, highest level, Blake Hoffarber, and we'll talk about it. The Gophers play at Nebraska tomorrow, and Nebraska's really struggling. The Gophers have struggled but been close. And Blake, I got to tell you, it's this Gopher team is kind of fascinating because they never give up. They never quit. And they kind of run out of gas at the 35-minute mark, 37-minute mark a lot in the Big Ten. But it's not like you go away saying, oh, my gosh, they're not any good. You kind of go away more frustrated than anything else because you go, man, they were kind of close that game. And even against Iowa, that's happened time and time. How do you see it from where you sit when you watch these games?
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I mean, I think I mentioned this earlier on in your show earlier on in the year, but or even end of last year. But, you know, I think at the beginning of the year, every fan and former player like myself, I wasn't expecting much from the team. And obviously they got off to a hot start. And, you know, with all the transfers that happened last year and new kids coming in, you know, it's going to be a little bit of a cluster for Coach Johnson. And he did a great job. And like you said, come Big Ten now, we all knew it was going to be a juggernaut, but they are doing a lot better than I thought they were going to be doing. It's just almost they run out of gas towards the end, which is, you know, kind of common come, you know, this time of year. You know, players start losing their legs a little bit, but also it's affecting us a little bit because we don't have a big bench, right? And a lot of Big Ten teams are playing a lot of different guys. Well, we just don't have that that level of guys that can play at this type of level. So I think it kind of hurts us down the stretch, but they are doing a great job.
So you know, knowing what you know and the new landscape of college basketball, if you look at the Gophers right now, it looks like they've got a pretty decent freshman class coming in. You won't know until they get here, but Farrell and Carrington and, you know, they've got some guys that have cut their teeth pretty well at the high school ranks. But would you look... You know, it looks to me like you don't want to rely too much on freshmen at all anymore in the Big Ten. You better be at least keeping an eye on that transfer portal for that mid-major 230-pound 6'8 kid that can take up space. How would you go about your business as you look at this roster and what to taking that next step next year?
Yeah, I mean, I they've done a great job on getting some local players out of high school now. So kudos to that, but you're exactly right. I don't think you can rely on a freshman coming in. I think after this year, I mean, I think Ben's got to truly look at the transfer portal kind of like he did last year. And I think number one is try to get some kids that might have left Minnesota for quote unquote bigger schools. And, you know, things might not have gone the way they wanted to, and potentially they want to look back home, or some just other kids that are across the country not liking where they're at. You know, mid-majors or high majors, and get some big guys. Like you said, I think getting some big, strong guys are going to be a big thing for us. I mean, with Eric Curry is kind of one of our only guys this year, and he's going to be gone next year. You know, I don't know anything about it, but, you know, getting a guy like, you know, I'm sure he's going to be there for 4 years or whatever, and I know nothing about this, even though he's a Hopkins guy, but say like Kerwin Walton, right? If he enters the transfer portal, say, because, you know, maybe, you know, I know he's having a little bit of a down year this year compared
North Carolina,
to last year.
Yep.
He's a great player, right?
Yep.
If he enters that transfer portal, we should be all over him. Not saying he will, but those are the type of players we should go after.
Blake Hoffarber is our guest talking about Gopher basketball, what's good and what needs to change, et cetera, going forward. You mentioned Kerwin Walton. I watched him work out a lot in the offseason, and he is, if you walked into a gym and watched him work out, you'd think he was an NBA player, the way he shoots it, his mechanics, all those things. Now, that probably speaks a little bit, you know, it can speak to the offense that they're running for him, and are they giving him screens and all those things. But you as a shooter, and a Hopkins shooter, if you were with him and you were trying to make the game easier for him right now, because he's probably fighting himself a little bit and confidence, all those and all those things that go with it, but you know that there's a greatness there to unlock, what would you tell him? How do you try to get that out of someone that you know has it in him?
Yeah, I mean, I went through that similar thing my sophomore year, similar to him. He's a sophomore. I think the biggest thing, and he knows it too, it's just tough to get around to it, but just try to focus on playing hard. I think if guys start focusing too much on, hey, my shot's not going down, or I'm not doing a good job, the harder you work, the harder you play, the less you'll think, and the more your natural abilities and natural, you know, shot and shot-making skills or whatever you do best will come out. So, you know, it's easy to say, but that's truly what you got to do, just put your head down, dive for loose balls, and then all of a sudden it'll come to you, right? You get a couple layups, you see the ball go through the hoop, and then you start getting into your rhythm again.
It kind of looks like another Hopkins guy. Amir Coffey went through that at the NBA level, and this year he's reaped some of those rewards.
Exactly, yeah. Amir's having I don't know if people have been following him, but he wasn't playing a ton at the beginning, and now he's doing great and playing a lot, and I think, you know, it goes to show they have a couple injuries, right? So you just got to be ready to step up at the right time. And the guys that take advantage of when they can step up and get into the game, you know, it's huge. And the guys that aren't ready and kind of sulking on the bench saying, you know, I should be playing, I don't know why I'm not. And then all of a sudden they get that opportunity and they're not ready, they're never going to get that opportunity again. So Amir's doing a good job on you know, taking advantage of this.
Yeah, you know, Blake Hoffarber, a great shooter, obviously you were and are. You beat me and Horace, you're such a good shooter. it pains me to say that, but you did. And you used some trick shot I've never seen before.
Where
you, the last shot, it was. I wanted to do real shots, and you sat down on the baseline and shot it sitting down on the court. I've never seen that before. I thought that was quite a trick shot that you pulled off. But, but you know, let's just – okay, so you work all year on to shoot the basketball and some of the Gophers do, et cetera. If a coach can see that you can shoot it, is it the coach's responsibility to figure out how to set screens and get a shooter the ball, or is it the shooter's job?
You know, I think you can't rely on a coach to do it. You got to find a way to get yourself shots. Granted, there's some type of players that just aren't more the players that can find their own shot, right? So it is good if you have a coach that – understands your game, understands, you know, offensive set to get you an open shot. You know, when I was in school, Ohio State did a really good job at that. They had a player by a guy named John Diebler that was a really good three-point shooter, and they had a lot of good players on their team, but they always found a way to set up a set play for John to get a three-point shot off. And it wasn't, you know, it was always, there was different variations within the plays, but Thad Matta did a great job on getting him that one opportunity to get him an easy shot to get him to go. But you can't always rely on your coach to do that. You got to be able to work on the off season, work on, you know, one step, you know, dribble, pull up, fade, you know, whatever your game's going to be. And that's why you see Steph Curry used to be that more, hey, he's just a shooter, to now he's a magician out there, right?
Yeah, and by the way, you played against him in camp, right?
One dribble, step back, one leg shot, you know, fading away. I mean, those are the type of things, as crazy as it sounds, they need to practice to be able to get their shot off when they're getting double teamed all the time.
And there are trainers that will train you in that. I mean, it's kind of a balancing thing where you turn your back to the basket at the free throw line, turn around on one leg and you shoot it, and it's amazing what that does for your balance and, you know, things like that. You know, Peyton Willis has played so well coming back for another year with the Gophers, and it's Jameson Battle has played so well. Does that tell you in some respects when you see the way some of these teams function, that if you come in the summertime and you go to summer school together and you play together, is that enough time to form a pretty good team in terms of conceptually that you understand each other? Because the transfer portal being such a big part of it, and maybe the Gophers leaning on it, that might be a big piece of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think nowadays, you know, even when I was in school, you know, you would have a couple months here and there and you couldn't practice in the summer, but you'd be at, you know, you'd be taking class and having open gyms and weightlifting and stuff. Well, now I believe they can practice more in the summer. So it's huge for these teams that are getting a lot of these transfers and trying to get their teams to mesh. I still think the best teams, you know, getting those newer players that are really good to buy into the system and mesh in. But the guys that have been around for a while and, you know, 4-year players that know exactly when they turn their head where that player is going to be just because they've been playing with them for 4 years, those are the best teams.
Well, Spencer Tollickson, I mean, you always knew where Spencer's going to be, right?
That's right.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, a little Timberwolves talk. You watch the NBA as well, and all of a sudden they've hit a hot streak. What do you see when you see the Wolves playing Sacramento tonight, but what do you see?
I mean, they're fun to watch. I mean, the bummer part is, and everyone knows I'm close with Ryan Saunders, you know, and the bummer part is, you know, whether, you know, Finch is doing a great job, obviously, but, you know, they had a lot of injuries, right? But the good thing this year is they got most of their team together throughout, you know, all the games, which is huge, right? So you got, you know, D'Lo and you know, Carl Anthony Towns and Edwards, they're all playing together, and they're great players. So I think that's really helping the team out, and it's showing. I mean, we're, you know, it used to be, you know, for the past 10 years, I felt like I'd get a notification if I wasn't watching the game or at my phone, and it would say third quarter, Wolves are up 10, right? So then all of a sudden, you know, 30 minutes would go by, and you look back at your phone, and we lost, right?
But now we're I know exactly what you mean. What happened?
and that's true. I mean, that's 10 years of my life with, you know, Minnesota.
That's
sports,
funny, because I think anybody that's a fan has gone through that, you know?
Oh, my gosh, we're up on the Lakers by 10, and all of a sudden you get another notification, oh, we lost by 20. It's like, what the heck just happened?
Yeah, that's something that y'all go through as fans. But, you know, when you see Anthony Edwards and the way he approaches the game, is the key to him, you know, granted, he's great athletically, he knows all those things, but at least to date, it seems like he doesn't take himself too seriously, or he's not selfish about a lot of things. Does he strike you that way? Does he strike you as that kind of a teammate?
Yeah, I think so. And he's just so gifted and talented. And, you know,
can you imagine what he must have looked like on the summer circuit when he was 15, 16 years old?
Yeah.
You know, you walk into those gyms and one guy just stands out. He must have just been off the charts.
Oh, yeah. And you can see that now. And obviously he got to where he is now, being one of the top lottery picks for that reason. But the good thing about him that gets him, he's got the talent, he's got the work ethic, and he's, you know, confident. Some people might say, oh, he might be cocky, but, you know, you got to be confident in what you do. And I think he's confident, and he knows he's a good player. And, you know, the if your teammates are okay with that and are confident and just know he's going to work his butt off just like everybody else, I mean, that's a good recipe for success.
And wouldn't everybody love playing with Jared Vanderbilt? Because,
yeah,
he's not looking to take any of your points away, man. If you miss, he's there. But he's not looking to take anything away from me. He's looking to help you.
Yep. No, those are in any sport, but, you know, in basketball for college and NBA, I mean, you got to have those glue players, right? The guys that are willing to get more pleasure out of setting the screen to get me a 3-point shot look versus, you know, dunking the basketball. And there are those people that, you know, they try to fake it and they don't truly want to do that. But there's the other players that get to the NBA just being a role player because they truly find success in watching someone else have success, meaning, you know, giving someone else a dunk, giving them a lob, setting a screen for them to get their 3-point shot off or whatever it may be. But every team needs those type of players, and every player wants to play with that type of player.
And everybody needs a bullseye shooter like Blake Hoffarber, too. Blake, thank you so much. Always enjoy visiting with you.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it.
Yep, we'll talk soon. Blake Hoffarber, former Gopher great, former Hopkins great, Mr. Basketball. I played him in Horace, and he made a shot. Can you believe that? That he'd sit down on the baseline and take a shot from there and call that part of the... That's a joke for those of you that don't get it, because he made that shot, remember, when he was a sophomore in high school, won the state championship, and got an SP for it and everything else. And that's when we first got to know him. But what a class act he is. What he did as a player was predicated upon hard work and this and that. I got to tell you something about today's basketball player versus when you and I grew up. And it's something that's profound. It might surprise you when we come back. I should have seen by the look in your eyes, baby. Welcome back, Sports to the Max. Been a good show tonight. Terry Steinbach on baseball, Blake Hoffarber on basketball. Gave you my take on what it's like to live downtown Minneapolis and not just talk about it in theory. And much more. Again, I think that you've got the support from people. It's just amazing in this town. I want to send them all gifts, you know. The difference between the basketball players now and the basketball players when you and I grew up, and I hate to say this because I was a gym rat. Loved playing basketball. So did my buddies. Ivy, Zeke. I mean, everybody. But the kids today work even harder that love basketball. I hate to say it, they do. They work even harder. And they've got so many more dimensions to their game. They work on their total body. They work on getting their feet sound and strong so they can play defense. I hate to say it, but we kind of focus on the offensive end of the game. You know, we shoot a lot of baskets, and that kind of constituted practice. But they're working on ways to get open and ways to fight through screens. It's amazing what these kids do nowadays to try to be good enough to play basketball on their, you know, on their high school team. And ultimately, I mean, if you can play on any college team, the MIAC, junior college, whatever it is, good luck. Because you can go out any time right now. If you go out, I watched three basketball games on Saturday, three high school games type games. Let me tell you, there's a lot of kids that are pretty darn good out there playing basketball right now. If you can crack any lineup at any level of college, man, you are a stud. When we come back, Gustavus has had some studs, including Mark Hansen, who became their coach 36 years. He's going to retire after this year. His thoughts, his philosophies when we come back.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This NBA season, every shot you take with Fanatics Sportsbook puts points on the board. Earn up to 10% fan cash on your bets, win or lose. So even if your bet misses, you're still scoring fan cash, which unlocks exclusive rewards like authentic apparel, game tickets, and meeting legends at Fanatics events. Make the switch and turn every bet into a bucket with Fanatics Sportsbook. Winning hits different here. Must be 21 plus. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or 1-800-522-4700. MD, visit mdgamblinghelp.org. Offer not available in all states. Terms apply. See Fanatics Sportsbook app.
Deborah had to have surgery.
I had hip surgery in November of 2024.
Her United Healthcare nurse, Crystal, checked on her.
We do a routine call after surgery, and I could tell that she was struggling.
Deborah needed help.
My infection markers were through the roof.
And Crystal knew what to do.
I called the hospital and said she's coming in.
And got Deborah the help she needed.
Crystal and United Healthcare saved my life.
Hear more stories like Deborah's at UHC.com. Benefits, features, and or devices vary by plan area. Limitation and exclusions apply.
I'm caught up in the game. My attention is on every play and every whistle. But what I'm missing is a signal coming from my kidneys. That signal isn't like a ref's whistle. It's more of a silent SOS, which could be warning me of an increased risk for events like heart attack or stroke. And a way I can catch that signal? A simple urine test called UACR. If you have type 2 diabetes or high blood pressure, talk to your doctor about the UACR test. Detect the SOS. Visit detectthesos.com to learn more.
On the job, every minute counts. That's why Lowe's now has ProBlock Quick Dry Primer, expertly manufactured by Sherwin-Williams. Engineered for pros to dry fast and go on smooth for virtually flawless results that keep your job moving. It's available in oil and water-based, and getting it is easy. Order online by 2 p.m. and get free same-day delivery right to your job site. Lowe's, we help you save. Orders placed after 2 p.m. will be delivered next day. Valid in select zip codes. Subject to driver availability. More terms apply.